This is Radio 98's Talkback with Ann Hutchison.
Well, hello, and welcome to hour number two of Talkback. And this hour, we are going to look at communism here in Canada and also around the world. My guest is Liz Rawley, who is leader of the Ontario Communist Party. Good morning.
Good morning, Ann.
Used to be that the word communist was almost a dirty word in North America. Times have changed a great deal, haven't they, in the last 10, 15 years?
Well, they have, and I'm glad that they have, frankly. I think the days of McCarthyism have long outlived their usefulness in terms of politics of this country and in terms of the struggle for peace on an international scale. So I'm glad those days are gone and that people are looking to see what communism or Marxism really is, what's happening in the socialist countries really, not what people like McCarthy want Canadians to believe. So, yes, they've changed.
It seems to me, though, Liz, that the only time, I say that, but I'm contradicting, I was going to say the only time we hear from the Communist Party seems to be during elections when in some areas we'll see them on the ballot. It's nice to see someone from the party traveling and drumming up some interest when there isn't election in the offing. Are you an active party?
We're a very active party, and I'm delighted to be here today. We weren't sure that we were going to get any press coverage. I have to say that's one of the big problems. And on the provincial budget last spring, we had a hell of a time getting an inch anywhere. So it's a pleasure to be here, and I'm glad you've opened your program to us.
Maybe one of the reasons that you don't get more media coverage, I can't speak for any other media. You know, I don't work for the paper or anything else, but there's no control put over who I can and can't have on the program. But I know that one thing that I always look into when I do a guest is how much interest there is in it. And it seems to me that one of the reasons why you might not get more coverage is because the Communist Party isn't that big.
Well, that may be. I suggest two things to you. One, it's true that we're a small party. We're also a growing party. And I think that the interest in the communist movement nationally and internationally is growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, what other words, perestroika and glasnost, are on the lips, foreign words, are on the lips of so many people in Canada and around the world? I mean, it indicates that people are extremely interested in what's happening in socialist countries. The other thing I think is that, and we're prepared to discuss that, that's why I'm here today, and how we relate to that. I mean, what is our vision of socialism in Canada? Is it that or something else? The other thing is that I would say that we represent a view in the labor movement in the first place that needs to be heard. We don't claim that it's the majority view or even, if you will, a mainstream view, but we think it's a view that we have a right to be heard. I mean, that is what being a registered political party is supposed to guarantee a certain amount of opportunity to be heard by the electorate between elections as well, and we fight for that. We want to be heard. People will judge whether they agree or not based on what we say. So we'd like to have the opportunity to be heard.
To be heard, so you can let people judge for themselves.
That's right.
And I think that's fair. Tell me about membership in the Communist Party here in Canada and in Ontario. Who are the members of your party, and how many are there, and where are the areas where you have the biggest pockets of support?
Our membership is about 5,000 across the country. It's about 2,000 in Ontario. I suppose the parts of the province where we have the biggest support are in industrial centers like Windsor, Sudbury, Hamilton, Toronto, Oshawa, places like that. I say Toronto because, of course, it's the provincial capital, and we have the biggest party organization is in Toronto. Well, we're too small. We'd like to be a lot bigger, and I invite your callers to give us a call. We'd be happy to talk to anyone who's interested in discussing with us.
All right. Our phone number is 643-9898. If you would like to talk with Liz Rawley, who's leader of the Ontario Communist Party, and tell her your views on communism. Maybe you have views about what communism is all about. Tell her, and she'll tell you if you're on the right track. 643-9898. Maybe you have some comments about the changes you see around the world. Uh, uh, Liz Liz says that essentially all the things that we're hearing out of the communist bloc countries show that world interest in communism is growing. Do you agree with that? 643-9898. How about the future of communism around the world? Any predictions? Some might say that communism is dying because of the changes we've seen. Do you think that these signs are telling us that that communism hasn't worked? Your views on communism, your questions for Liz Rolle are welcome. 643-9898. Communism is what we're talking about this hour on Talkback. We'd love to hear from you. The leaders. Program 643-9898 is the phone number. My guest is Liz Rolle, leader of the Ontario Communist Party. Liz, the feeling is the among some people that all these changes we're seeing, and that indeed even the words perestroika and glasnost are Russian words and not so much communist words, and they are words that show that the time has come for change because communism hasn't worked in these countries. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think there are a lot of people that would hope that this means the demise of socialism as a world system. I think their jubilation is a little bit early and ill-advised. I think they're wasting their time, because the way I see it, what is actually happening is that socialism as a system is retooling, if you will. I think your listeners from St. Thomas and who work in factories will understand what I mean. It's the same basic vehicle, but there are some changes to it which will improve it. We think that, socialism is getting its second wind, that it's taking into account the difficulties and mistakes that have been made, difficulties that it's encountered in economic developments, which doesn't take away from the achievements of socialism in the world socialist system in different countries over the years. But obviously they've run into difficulties now concerning consumer goods, concerning things like travel restrictions that have to do with currency, convertibility. And now they're trying to address
these questions. With human rights, what about human rights? I mean, we can't ignore that. That's one of the biggest problems in communist countries.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that. I know that people like Ronald Reagan say so, and Mr. Bush and Mr. Mulroney hold that view. They're the biggest defenders of human rights.
Well, we're talking about shooting people who try to leave the countries, in the past. That's not a violation of human rights?
Well, I would say that anybody who attempts to leave any country by illegal means is in for difficulties with the authorities,
Yeah,
be that
but if you're not allowed
the,
to leave
the Berlin Wall or whatever the case may be.
Surely you understand that people weren't allowed to leave communist countries.
That's not actually the case. I mean, if you look at the figures for immigration, for example, from the GDR, it's true that 50,000 people have left the country in recent weeks under extraordinary circumstances, and the party in the GDR is attempting to deal with that belatedly and everything else, but nevertheless they're trying to deal with it. It's also true that another 50,000 have left the country in the usual way, the way that Canadians leave Canada or Americans leave the States or Brits leave Britain.
I mean, since when? 50,000 since when?
In the past year. There is such a thing as immigration, there is such a thing as travel visas, and most citizens of socialist countries avail themselves of those methods. That's not to say that there aren't problems. I don't want to suggest that. But I also don't want to, I just simply don't agree that the issue of human rights is as Mr. Bush or Mr. Reagan places it. It isn't. In fact, I would say that the greatest violator of human rights is the American government. And you can go through the war in Vietnam, the recent troops into Panama, the invasion of Grenada, the British invasion of the Falkland Islands or the Malvinas. I mean, the list is endless. Just look at the abuses of human rights in El Salvador and what regimes are backing those regimes. So what I want to say is that there are problems in the socialist countries, and these are now being addressed belatedly, but they're being addressed, including human rights issues. And I think that's very welcome from the point of view of being a communist and a socialist. I'm very glad to see that these things are being addressed, that democratic rights are being expanded. I think that's important, but I don't agree that there was no democracy or no democratic rights before.
Let's go to our calls. We got 4 out of 5 lines gone here. Let's get some calls on the air.
All right.
Good morning, Rob. Hi, you're on the air with Liz Rolle.
How are you doing, Ann?
Good, thanks.
Well, I have to be blunt. I hate communism, and I hate communists. because they take away freedom to worship my God.
Well, that's not so anyways. I'm sorry that you feel you have such strong feelings about communists. We've never met.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you know how you feel about me one way or the other? You know?
Yeah, I mean, Rob, that's to say you hate communists. Isn't that kind of, you know, you feel that strongly?
I feel very strongly.
Yeah, well, insofar as religion is concerned, I think if you look at the socialist countries, you will see that vast new reforms are being made to expand the rights of believers and of churches.
Why don't they have those rights in the first place?
Well, most churches do have rights. I mean, there are churches in the socialist countries. I've visited some of them.
Why do the churches have an underground system of worshiping? I know missionaries that go to Russia, and they can't have open churches. They have to go underground to have churches.
Well, I would say I know, for example, that in the Soviet Union, the Jehovah's Witnesses were not allowed to practice as a legal organization. Frankly, I don't know all the reasons, but based on the way that they operate in Canada, there might be some reason for that. In any event, all those things have been repealed now, and all religions are free to practice.
Rob, last point to you, please.
Yeah, communism will never work. You can tell by all the Germans leaving communist country, and...
That was very advanced, okay.
Yeah, that won't make
deep,
it there.
Deep analysis.
Good morning, Shaw. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead, please. Your comments for Liz Raleigh. She's listening.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. First of all, the communism has a theory, and it has been practiced in certain countries. So there are two things, the theory and practice, and it seems to me that there is a big gap between what has been given as theory by philosophers like Karl Marx and Engels, those people, and what is being practiced in the so-called communist or more appropriately socialist countries like China or Soviet Union, Hungary, and Poland. Now, according to the theory or historical analysis or the analysis of the history given by the theoretician of communism, primitive communism should have been turned to feudalism to capitalism, to socialism, and ultimately to the communism they dreamed for. Now, to my observation, it seems that the socialist countries who have socialism nowadays, as they claim, did not pass through the stage of capitalism in its full state of affairs, and then it jumps from feudalism to socialism.
Okay, Shaw, what does all that mean, sort of?
That means the historical analysis of the theory of communism is wrong. It does not satisfy the circumstances we observe in this world. And nowadays, the socialist countries are moving towards capitalism. So
no, I don't think so.
Moving towards communism.
No, I don't think so. I don't agree with you. It is true that in some socialist countries, notably Mongolia, for example, the stages that you're speaking about that Marx spoke of, the stage of capitalism was skipped, and I think that's a very good thing. I mean, the kind of wage, the Industrial Revolution, for example, was bypassed, if you will, all the negatives of the Industrial Revolution, which everybody knows about, child labor, etc., in Mongolia, and the people were able to make big advances without having to go through that stage.
All right, last word to you, Shaw.
Okay, that's also happened in China. Now, my...
in parts of China.
Question in here is, would you accept that the communism as it started in... say, the 1917 in the Soviet Union, is now moving towards capitalism?
No, I don't accept that.
Capitalist?
No, I don't accept that.
Towards capitalism?
I think that the Soviet Union is quite correctly drawing conclusions that there is the centralization of the economy has become a problem in the Soviet Union, that there needs to be decentralization, that the bureaucracy has built up to levels which can't be sustained and are no longer useful, and so they're trying to take apart the bureaucracy and restore democratic control at the local level. I support that.
Shaw, we've got to leave it there.
That doesn't mean they're going back to capitalism. It means they're getting their second wind.
Got to leave it there, Shaw. Thank you for calling. Bye-bye. Good morning, Bruce. Hi, you're on the air with Liz Raleigh.
Well, hi. In the countries we've been talking about the past few minutes there, the word communist dictatorship comes to mind, and I was wondering if Liz could tell me if she was going to be the next Stalin of Canada if she got elected prime minister.
Well, I'm not running for prime minister.
your party, if you...
I would like to say that no communist party, ours or the Soviet Communist Party, is of the view that the crimes that were committed by Stalin and under Stalin are anything other than crimes.
No, they're purging Stalin now. There's no question about that. But
I want to suggest to you that we in the West wouldn't have known about the crimes of Stalin had it not been for the 20th Congress, the 20th Convention of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, which revealed these crimes to the world 25 years ago. And I think that should tell us something. I'm waiting for the day, frankly, when Minister Mulroney will say, hey, we've made a big mistake with this free trade. Let's reopen the debate and turn everything around because we were wrong. I think we're going to wait a long time for that here.
Bruce, last word to you.
You're not suggesting that countries like East Germany, Mongolia, and the Soviet Union are anything other than dictatorships, are you?
I'm suggesting that these countries are is countries that have socialism, that have working class power. That is to say, where the people who live and work in those countries make the big decisions. In our country, it's large corporations. You can see it when they pick up and depart, and we're left holding the bag, like the Scarborough van plant.
So who
makes the decisions in this country? It's not the people who live here.
I don't believe it. They're all dictatorships.
Bruce, thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's 21 minutes past 10 o'clock. We've got to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute. And this is Talk Back on Radio 98. Tomorrow morning, two topics for you once again. First hour, we'll be talking about Canada savings bonds. I'll have an expert in the studio to answer your questions. Second hour, one of North America's foremost genealogists will be my guest. His name's Ronald Bremmer. He's been called the human encyclopedia, and he'll offer advice to help you track down your own family tree and maybe even tell you something about your family. That's tomorrow. Hope you can join me for that. My guest this hour is Liz Raleigh, who is leader of the Ontario Communist Party, and she's here to talk to you, to answer your questions and respond to your comments about communism, not only here in Ontario and in Canada, but around the world. Have you ever, Liz, has your party ever had anyone come close to being elected? And, mm-hmm. What kind of support do you have mm-hmm. during elections?
We have a number of people elected right now at the municipal level, unfortunately not in London, but maybe in London somewhere down the line, we hope so. We've had two in the Ontario legislature and two in the House of Commons in Ottawa, but not for several decades, not since the immediate post-war period. They both got, or all four of them got knocked out by the Cold War.
And are there people who are members of the Communist Party, you say, who are in municipal government?
Yes, there are now.
Whereabouts?
Oh, in different, we have some in the peninsula, for example, in central Ontario, mainly in the southern part of the province, unfortunately, but not in London.
All right, back to our calls. This is Lillian. Hi there, Lillian.
Good morning. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
Have you ever lived under a communist regime?
No.
I didn't think so. Communism, among other things, has been called a big lie.
Have you lived under in a socialist country?
Pardon?
Have you lived in a socialist country?
No, and I pray that I never do. And I pray that it never comes to Canada. And I think possibly it is the prayers of many people that are finally turning back the tide of communism, and people are being enlightened to see what has really happened. You've made some, I think, pretty serious misstatements, or you've treated the truth rather glibly. And some of the statements you've made, and
I think that's a fairly glib statement on your part.
No, I don't think so. I think it's factual.
All right, Lillian, give examples.
Well, what is it that you want to ask, or what is it you want to say?
I'm about to say, if I may. The two of the biggest glaring lies or misstatements you have made is that, first of all, that some of these countries, such as Germany, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Poland, I don't know if they were all mentioned, but let us not forget Tiananmen Square, for the love of God. The whole issue is so inflammatory, I can't help but thinking of the poor Chinese students living in Canada, for instance, who are hearing you entertained on this program and telling these lies. To say that these...
I think you're fairly inflammatory. I think that's fairly inflammatory. What are you talking about? Let's let her finish.
Yeah, okay, if I may. The whole situation, the whole question is inflammatory, so at least...
Why don't you just say what you have to say and let the listeners decide what's a lie and what's not.
Tiananmen Square was pretty inflammatory. There was a lot of bloodshed there. Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Russia. To say that communism has not been a repressive totalitarian regime, everyone knows is a lie. Books, libraries could fill the stories of not only communist suppression of religion, of every liberty that was ever held sacred by people. Do you forget the food lines in Poland 2 years ago? Do you think we don't watch the media?
All right, Lillian. Let's let Lillian hang on. Let her respond.
I was about the religious suppression. And there have been books written about this. But I, just to find something very current, if I may, this is a quote from a paper that I just brought home this morning. And it's about a story about a priest called Father Alphonsus, I may not pronounce his name correctly because he's Lithuanian, Sparnaskis. He just, he's returning to his homeland in Lithuania. He said if he returns there, he knows what he will face, prison in Siberia. He has already served 3 separate prison terms, equaling 22 years in a strict labor camp with frequent solitary confinement. What great crime did Father Sparnaskis commit to deserve prison? He looks solemn as he answers, with the help of an interpreter, that all he did was to perform his priestly duties, such as All Saints Day processions, arranging pre-Lenten celebrations. And
Lillian, we're going to let Liz respond now. Liz, your response
to
some of these
things. Like to know, first of all, what journal she's reading, because I read the newspapers this morning. I read the Globe and Mail, I read the Star, I read the London Free Press.
It happens to be the Catholic Register.
I would just like to clarify where it's from. Well, I'm not... What do you mean am I
going
to challenge?
Let's respond to the thing she's got valid points.
The fact of the matter is that I don't know who this person is. I told you earlier when I was speaking to another speaker that many of the reforms that have been brought in the Soviet Union and in other socialist countries, but mainly in the Soviet Union, have to do with religious matters. It's clear that in Poland, for example, the Roman Catholic Church has a very big influence, and not only in the life of believers, but in the politics of the country as a whole. Everyone knows that. You don't have to be a communist to know that. So I think that your remarks, frankly, are they're your views and they're your opinions.
Let's talk about Tiananmen Square, because I think that's a very valid point Lillian has here. Liz?
Well, I don't think it's a valid point, but I think everybody was concerned about Tiananmen Square. We certainly were. All Canadians were. I think that the events there are very sad, and we regret very much what the...
How about the regime that caused them?
I said that we regret very much what has happened. We hope that the Chinese government and the Communist Party of China will do everything that they can to open up dialogues with the students and with other forces in society that want reforms. We know that there is a struggle going on inside the Communist Party of China between the reformers and between conservatives. We are not about to interfere. We have indicated what our views are, that we thought it was an error for them to have used troops against the students. What more can we say?
I think error is a bit of an understatement. Yeah.
1917, the day the Bolshevik Revolution took place, the Blessed Mother, the Mother of God, appeared in Fatima. This has been documented also by...
Lillian, final word on communism, okay?
By thousands of books and Hollywood movies. I'm sorry, may I just have a last word? This is very important, okay? Our Blessed Mother said that if the world did not pray more, communism would spread to the whole world. And I would just like to say that since communism is breathing its last in every country in which it exists, and it's only being held on by a thread, that they might resort to global warfare as their last resort. So I'm just asking everyone to remember to pray. Thank you.
I think that last statement is really outrageous.
We've got to take a break here. We'll be back in just a minute.
Let's come back to this.
Now, in a new location.
Minutes before 11. Liz, we were talking off the air, and you said that you really hope to address issues of world peace while you're on the program. Mm-hmm. What points did you want to make regarding communism and world peace?
Well, I wanted to say that 2 quick points. One of them is that I think Canadians will appreciate that all of the initiatives on a world scale that have been made in the last 5 years have come from the Soviet Union, the beginning with Reykjavik and the unilateral disarmament proposal.
I wouldn't agree with that, personally.
Oh, well, then I would like to know of one that's
so
come
I don't
from
think
the United
they would
States.
All agree.
Well,
no.
I think it's true, though, and I don't think anybody would argue. I mean, that's why everybody likes Gorbachev. That's why when Gorbachev goes to the United States, you get these chants in New York City, Gorby, 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 and people are very concerned about peace and war, and they regard the Soviet Union now as one of the superpowers that's prepared to go very far to achieve peace and
exactly.
disarmament.
Exactly, as one
and
of the superpowers. That's right.
Yes, of
and
course.
That's a positive
but,
sign.
Yes, it's a very positive sign.
But I don't
sign.
Think we have to say that the Soviet Union is the only country that's made any moves towards world peace. Goodness gracious.
I didn't say that. I said that it is... I think most people would appreciate the fact that there are two superpowers in the world, maybe three if you include China, but the two main players are the Soviet Union and the United States. And the fact of the matter is that they've been in a face-off position for decades, that the danger of war is extreme, and that the Soviet Union has made major concessions and major moves.
Yes.
And the point that I want to make is this, and I don't think we can be indifferent to that. As Canadians, we all want to live, and it's a small planet, and we've got to live together. And the point is that perestroika and glasnost are processes that will certainly help to achieve the goal of peace and disarmament in the world. And those who attack perestroika should remember that weakening the Soviet Union and weakening these processes of reform is not going to help the cause of peace and will make the world a more dangerous place to live in. And furthermore, Bush, just to tie this up, Bush's statements that he's in favor of perestroika, blah, 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 but they're not going to put up any money or extend any credits and so on, is a most dangerous approach to the situation. What they want to do is keep the Soviet Union in an arms race to drain their economy, as the American economy is being drained. And so long as they have to put money into weapons of mass destruction, they won't be able to bring reforms and consumer goods and the things that the people of the Soviet Union want. So I wanted to add that perspective, because it's not simply a question of socialism versus capitalism. It's also a question of peace and war.
All right. We've got to take a break here. We'll come back with more of your calls on TalkBack right after these. Don't forget, you can win yourself a pair of tickets to the Nylons concert coming up October 28th at 8 o'clock at Alumni Hall, plus a bucket of chicken from Scott's Chicken Villa. And it's all by tuning in and identifying the clues in Jim's Classic Gold every evening at 6:40. Back to our phone calls. This is Michael. Hi, Michael.
How you doing, Ann?
Good. Your comments or questions for Liz?
Well, I just want to comment on something she said before on human rights and immigration being like up to par, as it were, according to the communists. Well, I'd like to ask, what about the plight of Soviet Jews? You've got thousands, literally thousands, tens of thousands and more, who every year since the end of World War II have been trying to get out, and it's like a tap that's just allowing drops instead of a full flow. I mean, they all want to go out, and they have places to go. It's not as if there's nowhere for them to go. They've got places to go in the States that they're being sponsored, in Canada that they're being sponsored, and as well in Israel they're being sponsored, but the communists are just not letting them out. And you've got thousands of them who are prisoners of conscience in Soviet prisons, and they're just not being allowed out, not only for the sake of their religion, but because of who they are. It's a matter of also of anti-Semitism that is running wild through communist countries.
All right, let's get an answer here, Michael.
Thank you.
Well, I don't agree that anti-Semitism runs wild through communist countries. In fact, in the constitutions of all of the socialist countries in Europe, at least, anti-Semitism is illegal.
It's also illegal in Canada, but you still have it
no,
there.
No, it's not illegal in Canada.
Okay, Michael, let's get an answer.
It's not illegal. I wish it was illegal. It should be illegal. In any event, I think that there are a lot of problems. There's no question about it. I know that part of the reforms in the Soviet Union are to try and open up travel, to ease travel restrictions. Part of it has to do with the problem of convertible currency, the fact that the ruble and most of the currencies in the socialist countries are not convertible. That is one of the things that these governments have promised to try and address. It's not a simple problem.
What are you saying, Liz? I just want to understand your point here. Are you saying that they're not letting Jews out of the country because they won't have currency that they can use somewhere else? Is that what you mean?
I'm saying that I don't think that there is. I think that the question of Soviet Jews, there may be some point to it, although I understand that it's also true that the Israeli government has done everything it can to encourage Jews to emigrate, in the same way that the West German government has done everything that it can to encourage citizens of the GDR to do so. I'll give you an example if you want to hear it.
Yeah, but the Jews in Israel, the Israelis do not have to encourage the Jews in Russia to emigrate. Believe me, the Jews in Russia would like to emigrate a lot more than... They want to get out more than people really want them. More, they don't want to be there. I mean, they're being held. You've got trained engineers. You've got trained professionals on every level being held in prison for the fact that they were not born Catholic.
Well, can I make that's not true, but I want to make the following point. Well, I would like to make the following point, and that is that the in the GDR, for example. The West German government has promised every family and every worker that that will leave the GDR and come to West Germany a house, a car, automatic citizenship, schools for their children. In fact, they have been and all kinds of money. So these are things that are not available in the GDR. And of course, people being what they are, if they have access to these kind of things, and they compare what they have and compare what they could have, many people have decided to opt for going to the West so that they can have all these things. And on a human basis, I can understand that.
Michael, I'm going to give the last word to you here.
But to say that it's not political. It's not a political question. It's to ignore reality.
All right. Well, just two quick things. Number one, of course, if West Germany and Israel is going to offer exactly the same thing to these people, I mean, why can't the GDR, with all its communist power, why can't they do the same? And furthermore, the second thing I just want to say is that I think there's a long way to go before we don't see communism in the world, because there's a lot of people who are being oppressed for no reason whatsoever.
Michael, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll be back with more. Don't go away. Services Week in London, and they'd love to have you out for an evening of friendship and sharing in the Fellowship Mission Services tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock at Trinity Lutheran Church. That's at the corner of Colburn and Oxford Street. Let's go back to our callers. Hello, Barry.
Hello. Just making a couple of quick comments. One of them was the idea of decentralization in Russia right now. I know that apparently they have started on a farm exchange or agricultural exchange program with the U.S. government. In Time magazine recently, they were talking of a particular U.S. Farm family's experience in some farming communes. Where the heck was this now? Somewhere near Kiev or something. And I would say too, like for my second comment, seeing what I've been seeing in like underground music magazines, like Maximum Rock and Roll and stuff like this, that punk rock, hardcore, speed metal, or whatever you want to call it, you know, that music scene is actually quite active, and you know, it's rather interesting that we have some people who seem to forget some also what the Bible talks about.
Barry, what's your point as far as these things go? What's the bottom line here?
The one bottom line is that, you know, is for people who talk about how Catholic bishops are being threatened in Russia, think about some of the people in South America and what some of the bishops had to deal with there. Like the Bible goes and says, you see the beam, you see the mote that is in somebody else's eye, and you want to help them out. But
okay, we're getting into a lot of biblical quotes this morning, and I think I'd rather stay away from them.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is basically that what is going on is that everybody seems to be concentrating so much on what Russia is doing and then ignoring what we have been doing ourselves.
I think that's a fair point, and I think Liz wouldn't argue with you. Thanks for calling, Barry.
Yep.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Jack, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Ann. How are you today?
Good. Your comments, please.
Okay, Liz. After the, I don't believe that anybody, even Marx, would have advocated the wholesale slaughter of tens of millions of people that we have seen in communist and socialist countries in this century. But in fact, the basis of communism and socialism is the fact that some people, usually the productive, must be sacrificed to the unproductive. This human sacrifice, is this the basis also of Liz's moral philosophy? And if not, what is the premise on which she bases her philosophy?
Okay, I had some difficulty hearing your question, but if I understand, I'll try not, if I understood it correctly, the, first of all, the figures of so-called slaughters of people vary so widely. There's no question that people died during the Stalin purges, for example.
But between 20 million and 50 million, maybe.
Well, I'm not sure what the figures are. It's very hard to say what the figures are. There's no question, however, that it happened and that it was a crime. Nobody disputes that. And those kind of things must never be repeated. On the other hand, I think it's also important to understand that those crimes that were committed under socialism are regarded as crimes and are not something that are inherent to socialism. I would say that sort of thing is inherent to fascism.
You're calling what happened
camps.
In Tiananmen Square, though, a mistake. Is that
well,
not
I would
a crime?
Say,
you called
I
it
would,
a mistake.
I would
call
it
a crime.
Yes,
yeah.
I would call it a crime. I don't think that...
Is the sacrifice of some human being to others the premise on which you base your philosophy?
No, it's not. I guess that's the point. I would say the free and equal development of peoples is what the aim of socialism is.
Freedom.
Yes, freedom and democracy.
But socialism, communism, in no way advocate freedom.
Well, I would disagree with you. That's one of the reasons why I'm a communist. You know, I think though that. To say that there is such a thing as utopian socialism or any utopian society is dreaming. There have
how can you
the,
say
the
that
important
they have freedom
thing
when
is
a government
that,
can
last word to you, Jack.
Controls over your property.
Last word to
that's
you,
freedom.
Jack. Go for it.
Is that freedom, Liz?
I would say that
when they have control over property, is that freedom?
Well, I think that in this society where a handful of people have control over property and over the wealth of the country, that's not freedom, and that what socialism is to put the controls over the main levers of the economy in the hands of the majority of people. Now, have they succeeded? I think they're in the process of trying to succeed, of correcting mistakes and of rectifying errors that they've made and of exposing crimes so that they won't take place again.
Jack, I offered last word to you, Jack, and you chose to ask a question. We've got to leave it there. We'll be back in just a minute. This is Talk Back on Radio 98. Time for one more quick call here. Ted, your points, please.
Yeah, first of all, we are living in a socialist country, to the left of center socialist country. There's no doubt about that. And if I heard this right, I think it's ludicrous that Liz should say that comparing the free trade agreement to the purges in Russia in the 1930s and 20s. And the third statement is that if the communist system in Russia, which I'm sure she's not that type of communist, and Eastern Europe is so efficient, why are all these people leaving? Now, that's all I've got to say. Thanks.
Thanks Bye. For calling. Liz, we've got about 3 minutes here. You want to respond to that and also... you know, tell folks the message you're here to get across.
Okay. Well, first of all, the Mulroney trade deal, it seems to me, is, you know, I don't want to compare that to the purges during the Stalin years, and I don't think I did that, but I do think that it is also true to say that there is no socialist country which has ever done, or socialist leader which has ever done what Mulroney has done, and that is to hand over the whole country to another country, that is to Mr. Reagan and Mr. Bush in the United States with a free trade deal. You may be able to accuse socialist countries of many things, but that's not one of them. And I think that we have have a lot of work to do right here in Canada in terms of democracy and having governments that are responsive to the
But how does communism tie into that? We can do that without communism.
Well, I'm not sure that we can, frankly. I mean, when you have a neoconservative government, which I think is far to the right of center, which is lied its face off to get elected in last fall in the elections, promised that social services, etc., social programs were a sacred trust, that lower prices were going to be one result of free trade, that jobs would expand, etc. And you see plants shutting down, prices going up, an unprecedented tax grab in the form of the GST, and so on and so forth. I mean, this government lied. It lied to get elected. And I think that the fight for democracy is not something that
you don't
only
have to tell me that.
These...
I agree with you, yeah, but okay. I wouldn't vote communism because
well,
of that.
Well, I don't know. You should look at our program and see what you think. But the point I want to make is that I don't think that one should be worried about should be only concerned about the question of democracy in the socialist countries. I think we also need to be concerned about it here, and there are many good reasons to begin to turn that question on here, which doesn't mean we should ignore it over there. We need to turn it on here. The other question I want to address is why are there these shortages in the socialist countries that make the West so appealing? I think in part it has to do with the fact that the United States has poured millions and billions and billions of dollars into West Germany, for example, since 1945 to make it a very appealing place to live and for very political reasons, to make the West look better. I know when the Vietnamese boat people came to Canada, many Canadians responded in a very backward way. Why should these people have apartments and cars when Canadians were out of work? I don't think that's appropriate, but I think it's understandable, and I think that the West is trying to engender that kind of response today.
Liz, if people want more information, interested in talking to someone with the party, what number do they call?
Well, they can reach me in Toronto. My number is 593-1080. I'm there most days, except when I'm in London visiting. I'd be pleased to hear from any of your listeners.
All right, that's area code 416-593-1080. Liz, thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much.
I'll be back in just a sec to remind you what's up tomorrow.